Good afternoon and welcome to this podcast. My name is Mitch Dunford with the National Alliance, and we're charging through a series that we're creating talking about program business, developing a program in your agency. And I have on the call today Richard Kerr. Richard is, as many of you know, the CEO of Market Scout. Richard, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And weren't you just on vacation?
I don't take vacations, Mitch. I'm just too busy working. No vacations for us.
Well, let me rephrase
that. Vacations later.
Weren't you working from the beach somewhere, you know, south of here? Man, there's rumors, I guess. Rumors.
That was true. That's all true. But I was working very hard.
I bet. Well, it's nice to have you back. And we also have Joanne Clark, one of our senior academic directors here at the National Alliance. Welcome back, Joanne.
Thank you, Mitch. It's great to be back. And I wasn't on vacation. It is work for me.
But you did mention when we were on the phone a few minutes ago that you have now successfully visited every one of our 50 states, right?
As of today, I'm coming to you live from Charleston, West Virginia, and it was the last state on my list. So
you must have a zillion frequent flyer miles, right? You're one of those people.
I do, but you know, most of us who fly as much as I do are look at a vacation and say, "Where can I go? Not on a plane."
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Stay.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, but it's good. It's a beautiful city here. If you haven't been to Charleston, West Virginia, you ought to put it on your to-do list.
Definitely. Well, listen, our first episode was kind of a general overview of program business. And in this episode, we want to break it down a little bit and start talking about how to identify program opportunities within the agency. And then in the third episode or our next episode, we'll get into what we're calling the devil is in the details. So without any further ado, Joanne, let me turn the time over to you and Richard.
Thank you, Mitch. So as Mitch said last podcast, we talked about some basic fundamentals and want to dig a little deeper today. And Richard, one of the things that we've talked about briefly last time was that programs need to be successful. And no doubt, successful programs have common denominators. Can you share a little bit about what you've identified as components of a program that would be successful from the retail agent's perspective, the carrier's perspective, the MGA or the wholesaler, and probably the insurance perspective as well?
Sure. So keeping in mind that we're here to help our retail agency partners figure out a way to take existing business mix and frankly, make it better for their clients because it'll be a better, more well-tuned program or coverage assimilation that's in the best interest of their clients, but also it's for the agent to make more money and for the agent to get better control of his own destiny and the destiny of the clients. So in doing that, you assemble a lot of the data that's related to the program, try and figure out what's going to make it successful, because we don't want to go down the road and find a roadblock that keeps us from moving forward. Some of the things that make it successful are just you have to have enough. The primary issue is you have to have enough premium volume, and that premium volume has to be profitable for the insurance carrier.
So one of the things that we've talked about is that, you know, what is the minimum written premium? What would an agent need to have in their current book to even consider moving it into a program? And then on a related, you know, I know that my experience in the past from the carrier side is we've had program business, and then a year or two into the program, completely unexpected, unanticipated losses happen, and it ends up with the program being discontinued. So what's the minimum premium volume, and what, if anything, can be done to really take a look at that loss ratio so that it doesn't turn it into an unsuccessful program?
So generally speaking, if you talk to the insurance companies that do program business, they will say you need to start a program with $5 million. However, in this market, there's a lot of folks that are hungry, and we are, for the first time in many years, even seeing grassroots programs initiated if it has a good business plan and all the right components. But if I'm in a retail agency, I would feel around $3 million in premium to get it started, because it's not all going to come. And you would also have to have a very defined path for growing that. No insurance company wants to do a program for $3 million. It's just not sustainable. But if you have $3 million and you have a path towards $10 million, then that can be a successful program.
And what about loss ratio? Can we, is there anything magical about the loss ratio that we need to be looking for with program business?
In reality, you know, that's part of the reason you need to have premium volume and spread a risk in order to control those losses. If you come out of the gate and you just flat get unlucky, your program's probably going to blow up unless you have a very patient and understanding insurance underwriting partner. So in the first year is when it's going to be the riskiest for everyone involved, because you don't have enough premiums on the books to handle the losses that may come. So if you're doing an auto program and you get hit with $1.5 million loss right off the bat, it's going to be tough to sustain.
Right. And if it's not pretty to begin with, it's usually not pretty at the end either, right?
Richard, I had a quick question for you. When you talked about an agency with $3 million in premium with a pathway to 10, what does that mean when you talk about path?
So if you have $3 million in-house and you start a program, you know all $3 million isn't going to move over for various reasons. But if you are, for instance, a specialist in tow trucks and you just have garnered the endorsement of the Tow Truck Association of Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Washington, and in years past you only had Alabama, then we have a pathway to possibly riding $10 million because you have new opportunities, new endorsements, new extensions that'll get you where you want to go. Another pathway would be that you have a web presence or something of that nature, or you've opened up new offices that will facilitate distribution into a broader, deeper range.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense.
So, Richard, you mentioned spread of risk and the property spread of risk for a program. Can you explain spread of risk? And another term that we hear used a lot is modeling. How does that help ensure success of a program?
Well, particularly, Joanne, if it's property related, we all know about the law of large numbers whenever we took insurance 101, and that is that if you have a lot, if you're insuring barns, you don't want to insure all the barns in one county, because if a tornado comes through there, you could really get hurt. So you would like to insure barns and maybe insure five in each county and in many, many different states. Therefore, if a hurricane comes or an earthquake comes or a hailstorm comes, you may get hurt in one, you know, outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you will have losses there. However, you have a lot of risk in Florida or in Washington State that has nothing to do with that cataclysmic event in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So that spread of risk and the premium from those other accounts helps balance things out, and it enables you to survive, you know, catastrophe losses on an ongoing long-term basis. Whereas if you had all your premium in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you'd be wiped out.
So, Richard, when we talked about the path and, you know, $3 million now and going to 10 and, you know, just word of mouth and all of the things that you've talked about, I would imagine that helps with your spread of risk as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's what it's all about, is getting the spread of risk. And you did ask me about risk modeling. So today, there is some very, very sophisticated modeling software that we'll get into in the detail section. But basically, it enables you to set at a computer, and every time an account is bound in a certain geographic area, the map of the United States on your screen will light up, and it'll go from green to yellow to orange to red, with red meaning, okay, gang, we've just written enough barns in this county, no more. the county over here is green, so you're free to ride over there. And as a matter of fact, this will help agents better understand why they get confused in that they say, one time I get a rate of 30 cents from Travelers, for instance, and then the next week it's 45. Well, the reason is they're, from the modeling standpoint, they're going from 10 barns to 15 to 20. They might have capacity for five more barns in that county, but you're going to pay dearly for it. And that's part of the agent's job, is to understand how that works. So at the end of the day, as you explore programs, you're going to get smarter. And even if you don't do a program, you're going to be a lot smarter because you will understand and appreciate the underwriting modules that are used by your insurance company partners. And it'll help you understand when and how to better serve your client. So getting into this program field is a wise thing for you to do if you have commonality of coverages or industry groups. And it's a wise thing to do just to know about it, so you know better how your underwriters are thinking and what some of the new tools they're using. For those of us that came up, you know, and were educated and trained over the last 10, 20, 30 years, the underwriting systems and the methodologies for evaluating risks are changing dramatically, and we need to stay on top of our game. This is going to help you do it.
A lot more sophisticated, that's for sure. From a liability standpoint, one of the other components that I know that we talked about was class codes, but can you share a little bit more about class codes and how that helps us have a successful program?
So yes, to that extent, you wouldn't go, don't go to your insurance company and say, I want to do a program for general liability, because that's ridiculous. It's too broad. So you would say, I want to do a program for general liability for the following class codes. And those class codes might be tree trimmers and wood haulers. And that makes sense, because then you can become an expert at tree trimmers. You can't be an expert at general liability on a broader basis, because it extends across too many industries. Goodness, there's a general liability policy on almost every account. So whenever we talk about targeting class codes, that's what we're meaning. Be an expert, be specific, be very focused. It's a rifle shot, not a shotgun.
Great. I think the last thing that you've talked about, and we've talked about somewhat in the last podcast, and that's underwriting. And boy, we really talked about underwriting and the importance of that qualified and experienced person in this capacity. Is there anything else that our listeners should know about underwriting being that fifth component of a successful program?
They just need to know that it's important, and there's going to have to be an individual with insurance company or MGA underwriting experience running the program. So that is, again, they can do that in-house, or you can partner with a program company or an MGA to provide that particular expertise.
Okay. So you've talked about some of the traditional programs. I think you mentioned tow trucks and tree trimmers. Can you give us examples of a couple of other traditional programs? But then what are you seeing in 2017, Richard, with regard to program business that we would have never envisioned even being possible 5 years ago? What are we seeing trending now?
Sure. So when you say traditional programs, there's probably 500 of them. Just think about class, you know, every coverage, you know, E&O, D&O, workers' compensation. You can identify a program by coverage, or you can identify a program by industry group. And when you're thinking about that, just drive down the road. As you're driving, you can look, you say, well, there's a landscaper. Okay, there's a landscaping program. I'm passing a golf course. There are golf course programs. Now I'm driving on down the road and I see a McDonald's. Well, there's franchise programs for restaurants. It's endless. It goes on and on and on as far as those traditional programs go. But where even more opportunities is presenting itself today are programs arising out of things like the sharing economy. That would be programs to insure Uber and Lyft drivers, things of that nature. What about Airbnb? Very difficult, new age exposures that the industry doesn't quite know how to take care of. And anyone with a program mentality that understands that, it creates great new opportunities. Other new era programs would be surrounding the Internet of Things. That would be things like home monitoring. As you well know now, I mean, there are so many things that you can do to monitor your home, you know, from fire. And it's not the old traditional fire alarm, et cetera. You can be sitting in Charleston, West Virginia, looking at your screen, your computer screen, watching everything that's going on at your home. There's monitoring things for water flow to shut off the water, things of that nature. Ensuring those companies that are doing that is different than the old traditional programs of doing a tree trimmer. So those are some of the new evolving program opportunities that we all should be looking at.
I suppose drones might fall into that category as well.
Absolutely. Who would have ever thought drones would be where they are today? And drones is one of the most complex, interesting new coverage areas that we're all looking at today. And there are new programs springing up for drones. And they aren't just drone specific. It's not just drones, because there are many different kinds of drones, drones for photography, drones for delivering packages. And as you start to think about it, you can just imagine all the new age, different kind of exposures that presents. Perfect opportunity for a new program.
Well, it's interesting that you should talk about delivering packages, because I believe it was on the front page of the USA Today, they've discovered that drones have been delivering contraband into some of the federal prisons.
I didn't see that. Doesn't surprise me.
Amazing. Holy cow.
Yeah, and it's crazy, because with drones, you clearly have both personal lines and commercial lines exposures there and needs for coverage. So, you know, I just wonder, with drones and sharing and the Internet of Things, what's next, right? I mean, what can we even envision would be new down the road? But whatever it is that's coming up, you could probably work with an agent on creating a program.
That's true. And the more unique it is, the more specific, the better your opportunity for success. I mean, if you have $3 million of tree trimmers, yes, you should do a program. But if you have technical expertise and people that understand drones, or, you know, the Internet of Things or the sharing economy, and furthermore, a way to use technology inside of a program on a more direct basis, a peer-to-peer, B2C, business-to-consumer, anything that assists the insurance underwriting company in capturing a more meaningful distribution mechanism is very, very hot right now. So programs are about as hot as you can get. MGAs, programs, agents that have programs. You put on top of that the program related to the sharing economy, the Internet of Things, and one that facilitates a more direct distribution model, you have a winner.
Well, it sounds like technology is just all over program business, isn't it? Both from a identification of a potential for a program, and then all of the reliance of the carriers on technology. I've heard the term big data thrown around from time to time with regards to carriers. Can you share with our listeners what that might be referring to, Richard?
Big data is simply utilizing what's available via the web and different data sets that's out there in the world today, and it is facilitating new methods of underwriting. So as an example, is there somewhere that can tell you how many cars pass a particular intersection at any given time during the day? Absolutely. Absolutely there is. We just don't know how to access it. Big data and big data scientists enable us to get access to those data sets and to use things like that to better underwrite a particular account. So if you were doing an auto insurance and you knew that your insured never went through one of the high traffic areas where a lot of accidents are, you might give them a lower premium. Conversely, if you knew they were going through intersection number 12, which has a 60% chance of an accident every 3 days, that might merit an increase in their rate. Up until recently, those type of data sets were not available. And that's not how we underwrote, because we didn't have that data. All of this information is coming to the forefront now and being utilized for underwriting in the new economy. So big data is a very important part of that. And whenever you think of big data and underwriting, just think about how could an underwriter get more information that is important to them for risk evaluation and where those data sets might be. And you know, everything we do online, everywhere we go, everything that everyone is doing is being data-based somewhere. So that data is out there. Insurance companies are trying to determine how to access it and how to use it to give those risks that deserve a lower premium that lower premium. And those that deserve a higher premium will be assessed accordingly.
Well, I think one of the things that you've shared with us today, Richard, has been while we've been focusing on program business, a lot of what you've talked about with underwriting, they're going to see in their non-program business as well. And things are just constantly evolving and changing from an underwriting standpoint. Knowledge is power. I find this just fascinating to see how much technology has impacted our industry, and especially how it is beneficial in writing a successful program. So I think we've hit the program opportunities that we wanted to during this podcast. Richard, was there anything else you wanted to add before we talk about what's coming up next?
No, I just think that we should all gather together and try and help each other figure out the program space and view of these new sharing economy and Internet of Things, because it's going to be a real opportunity for all of us. And like you said at the onset, Mitch, we're here to help.
The title of the next episode is The Devil's in the Details. And Richard, you want to talk about any of the finer points of that conversation? What do we mean details?
So when we get into that, this is when we find out that we've gone through and we've identified the opportunity and it really is there. So we wanted to save time and effort and find out if it's there. If it is there, now we're going to get into the details, such as tailoring coverages and what geographies and specifically how we're going to write the business. Just consider writing a SWOT analysis, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, along with a business plan where you really drill down and say, this is how we're going to do it. Process engineering, who's going to do what, those kinds of things. From the minute the account comes in the door and they want a quote, how are we going to make that happen? How do we issue policies? How do we deliver them? How do we do audits? How do we do checks and balances to make sure we're doing the right thing and not letting something slip by? So that's the devil in the details. This is where you start getting really granular. And we won't go into everything, obviously, but we want you to have a real good understanding as to what this really means. And some retail agents say, oh, goodness, that's not for me. Next. Yeah. Others want to get into it. So that's, again, we're here to let you know the good, the bad, and the ugly of doing programs.
Sure. So thank you both, and we'll see you in our audience in the next episode.